Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, May 2nd, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
All good over here.
Very nice. Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. And hi, Charlotte.
Hey.
I'm glad you're both here today. We're going to talk about something that's important to all of us, and not just the hosts of the show, but also most people listening, and that would be cables. We heard a tale of woe from our own Dave Hamilton this morning.
Tell the listeners what Dave Hamilton saw.
Well, for all I know, he stared into the abyss, and all that stared back at him was cables that he had no idea what they went to anymore.
No, I mean, he was looking at the background when we were having the morning meeting, and he saw Amazon boxes stacked up behind me.
It was me. So here's a bit of background for TMA listeners. We all do a video meeting every morning. It's kind of the afternoon for me. And every day for about 6 months, I have noticed that John is kind of encased by Amazon boxes. And a few months into my time being at TMO, I finally plucked up the courage this morning to ask John what is in the boxes. But then Dave guessed that it would be cables, and Dave was correct.
He was correct.
And what happens when you get a bunch of geeks discussing cables? They talk more about cables. And so we suddenly realized that we all have a collective problem and suspected it applied to our listeners, that we have many cables.
Where do you put them? How do you sort them?
In all the places.
Yeah. When is it time to let them go is the real...
Never.
Well, as long as you have a device that needs it, then you should have one. You don't need nine.
One of everything.
You should just have one.
We were talking about I'm pretty sure I have a 30 pin to FireWire 400 adapter for an old iPod.
I still have a FireWire cable. I don't know if I have a 30 pin to FireWire cable. I think I may have gotten rid of that when I realized I didn't have any machines with FireWire anymore. So that I may have gotten rid of that. But I do have a 30 pin cable. I have a couple 30-pin cables, actually.
Well, that works until you discover your little 40-gigabyte hard disk that you bought in 2004 in the back of a shelf, and it's FireWire, and you're going, gee, I wonder what's on this drive. Mm-hmm. And you go,
I have no words. So I am notoriously bad. When I was living with my parents, I had cables everywhere in my room. When I bought my own place and moved, I left an entire luggage bag of cabling at my parents, which just, you know, kind of as a reminder. And I'm still regularly asked to remove it, and I just can't quite bring myself, because I have the same thing as you. What happens if I need that cable? Mm-hmm. What do I do?
And you can't be sure the Monoprice will still stock it.
Precisely.
We don't even have a Monoprice here. But there is an answer to all this.
Well, there are a few.
No, there's one.
Yes, and yours?
Marie Kondo.
Now, I will point out, this should come with a disclaimer. If you ask Charlotte most any question, her answer will be Marie Kondo.
That is correct.
So, just to make sure people know where you're coming from. What I have done, because no, the cables don't necessarily spark joy, but they are something that I need to have, depending what they are. I do go through the house every few months and find all of the micro USB cables that have somehow ended up in my house. I don't know how I keep getting more. But I will scoop up a bunch of those and take them off. There's a nonprofit here in Portland called Free Geek, and they take your electronics. This is the real life equivalent of the farm upstate, where you can take all of your electronics, and they will give them good homes. They will either recycle it responsibly, or they have a thrift store. So if I ever need a FireWire cable. I can probably go there and get one for a few bucks because they have a store next door. And then like the computers and the other technology that you send to them, that you drop off there, they will do things with. Like if it's a computer, they refurb it, they install Linux, and it becomes a Linux machine for somebody that works there and different stuff. So they do a lot of cool stuff with their e-cycling, and Oregon has a lot of good e-cycling laws. Like there's a lot of stuff that you can just recycle that places have to take, and there's a lot of facilities that will take the stuff that just doesn't have any actual use anymore.
There's another consideration, Kelly. Mm-hmm. Parental tech support.
Oh yes, I have a separate stash of cables for that.
You may be up to date, but when you go over to your parents' house where their VCR is blinking 12 midnight,
yes,
you may need extra cables.
This is true.
VCR.
I knew Charlotte was going to end up there. What's a VCR? So what we have done at my house, because like I said, there are some cables that we have to have for one reason or another. So I have this bin where cables live. It is box of cords. We have narrowed it down. It used to be box of cords and son of box of cords. And we managed to get everything down to one bin. And what I did was sorted everything out. And I have, because I have different cables for different things. So like all of them go in one place. I have AV equipment that has specific cables. There's, you know, the kind of stuff you hook up in the car, the kind of stuff you hook up to different sound systems, and then like the tech stuff. So I have Gallen zip top bags, and I wrote on the front of each of them like, this one's micro USB, this one's car stuff, this one's HDMI things, this one's like the bits and pieces that go to the receiver, like the little calibration thing that came with the receiver that you're supposed to use to make the make sure your receiver sound good.
USB-C stuff, adapters, dongles for your new MacBook Pro.
Well, that won't happen until I get a new MacBook Pro, and I'm partial to things like ports and a keyboard that works, so that's not happening anytime soon. So
someday you will have a MacBook Pro with USB-C, and you will endure the joys of USB-C to USB-A and other dongles.
Well, at this point, it's going to be USB-D by the time I get a new computer. So we'll see. But I've labeled, so there's like two pieces of this, and that's Ziploc bags, which also make it easy to dismantle the box. So if I need something at the bottom,
that's brilliant.
I just haul out all the bags, or like I know I need that thing to hook up the thing in the car, and I have a bag that's just the stuff that hooks up in the car, so I can grab that bag and figure out what I need. And then the other power management piece I have, I think I've written this up on TMO actually, is the silver Sharpie, because Sharpies come in silver. And the great thing about the silver Sharpie is that black wall wart that has no identifying information on it at all, that you drop in the box and then 6 months later you have no idea what it hooks up to. You can write on it what it's for, and you can read it, and it's great.
Like it. There are a few things in this world that a Sharpie can't fix.
This is true.
Thought.
I have a Leatherman for the rest of them.
So we're thinking labeling is the answer to all these conundrums.
Well, labeling and a little bit of honesty. I always talk about technological honesty, and it's you know, if your parents don't have iPods, and you no longer have any iPods, and you still have that 30-pin cable, it might be time to let it go.
I still have a 30-pin cable because I sometimes charge up my iPad 1.
Oh, see? You still have a thing that uses it, so you should keep that cable. You don't need 5, but maybe you need one.
Do you guys remember the massive white block brick Apple desktop adapter?
Mm-hmm.
For displays?
Oh, yes.
A couple pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I finally
you could weightlift
out
with that.
Yes.
Yes, it was a workout device as well. Those were massive.
So the psychology there for me is sometimes Apple's cables are so cool and so well built, so pretty, so white, so sturdy, that you just have this emotional attachment to their quality. Whereas if it's a little micro USB cable that came with some power device, mm-hmm. You know, it's just a piece of crap you throw it in the trash.
I swear, every time I think John couldn't get more John.
The Johnness of John.
I mean, yeah. Seriously.
I believe we're at this moment here is peak Martellaro.
I mean, seriously.
Until we get to the next
the
moment,
cable.
Which is even more peak Martellaro.
I don't even know anymore.
Another tip that I would give people is I've given this on different things. There's a company called Human Gear, and they make these little Go tubs, I think is what it's called. And it's just a little, it's about the size of the palm of your hand, maybe a little smaller. It's the size of the palm of my hand. I have small hands. And the top snaps on securely.
Echo Dot.
Yeah, it's about the size of an Echo Dot. And the top snaps on super securely, and it's just this little plastic container. And what I love about it is sometimes you get stuff and it comes with some sort of accessory, or you get an adapter of some sort that's very small, and you take one look at it and you go, I am going to lose that so fast. So I have this little device on my desk, and I have it for all of those little things. Like, I have a Nifty Mini Drive in my computer, and the little gadget that they give you in order to remove the Nifty Mini Drive, it lives in here, along with my 30-pin to Lightning cable adapter, and my MagSafe to MagSafe 2 adapter, and some other little bits and pieces of stuff that are in here. I have an ejection tool in here, the nano SIM from my last iPhone, some different things. So I have all of a couple of SD cards. So they all live in here because I will lose that so fast if I put it anywhere else. And this little thing just lives on my desk and gives me a place to put all those little parts that I'm going to need later.
The psychology that upsets me, Kelly, is that every manufacturer assumes that their device, their plugs, their protocols, their cables, their gotcha, this gadget, whatever connects to it, is all you'll ever use your whole life. Mm-hmm. And nothing else in your life matters. And you'll pay attention with devotion and love to their product and master it and never lose that little widget part. Mm-hmm. And in fact, what happens is our life is chaos of all these different things. And the one that doesn't work for us, or the one we lose the widget for, gets thrown out because mm-hmm. we just don't have time to mess with it.
Right.
So word to the manufacturers, build your stuff so that it's compatible and easy to use and doesn't come with idiosyncratic tools and connectors. Mm-hmm. That way you immediately lose. And so
you are aware we write about Apple.
Well, most of what Apple sells you isn't tiny little things. I think the smallest, like generally like an adapter or something, isn't all that little. And the smallest one I have is this MagSafe to MagSafe 2 that I got when I got a new computer, but I was still using the old one, and it was nice to be able to swap between, you know, have one power adapter plugged in and swap whatever computer was plugged into it at the time if I needed to. So
yeah, no, but I'm making a sort of semi-serious point, actually, that Johnny's quite right that
yes,
we build up all this stuff because all the companies think we need their thing and whatever else. And Apple, actually, as it happens, is the worst for this.
Mm-hmm.
The extra bits, oh, you need this adapter because we yes. only Apple build it this way with this connector. That Apple is particularly bad at this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And John is absolutely right. Companies really do need to think about compatibility, but you could easily make the case that Apple is particularly bad at thinking about compatibility.
Yes. That's part of why I don't give them too much grief about USB-C, because lots of things are moving toward USB-C. And so ideally, in a couple of years, this will be a much easier thing to manage when lots more stuff is USB-C and that's all anybody needs.
Right, but think about the 30 pin adapter when everything else was a USB type thing. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's been a lot of time over the years where Apple has basically required you to buy and have extra stuff.
Mm-hmm. And
that's why this is such a mess in our homes.
Well, that's not the only reason. But this is like the second or third year, I think, that we've heard that the new phone's going to be USB-C. So we'll see if it happens. So we have some tips. I will link. I did write a pro tip article, I think, about like the magic that is the silver Sharpie. I'll make sure we put that in the show notes. But if you have cable tips, we would like them. If you're doing anything, if you want more information, or anything about some of the stuff that we do for cables, you can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter. You can email observations@macobserver.com if you have the right adapter hooked up for email. And you can also leave a comment in the show notes. What I want to do also, we have a few minutes left. I'd like to talk a little bit about streaming and the quality of video streaming. This comes from
streaming.
Well, this comes from two places, and it's not just audio. First, there's been a lot of discussion this week about video streaming and what it looks like and how it lacks in some ways. And specifically, this comes down to HBO and Game of Thrones and the Battle of Winterfell, which happened on Sunday. And it was very dark in a lot of places. It was a huge battle that took place at night. There was a lot of action happening all at the same time. And a lot of people had a really hard time seeing it. It was very dark and very fast. A lot of stuff that happened. And in some cases, if you were watching the streaming, it was really hard to see. And a lot of people like to watch the streaming because, for example, if you live on the West Coast, that episode goes up on streaming at 6 o'clock instead of having to wait until 9 to watch it on actual television if you have HBO that you subscribe to. So there were, like, first of all, I was mostly impressed. I didn't hear about a lot of people having trouble streaming, so I thought that was super great. But it turns out HBO isn't streaming at anything near the bandwidth that other streaming services use if you're using HBO streaming. And Netflix is about to take that to the next level with their stuff, right, John?
Well, and now
as far as the quality of streaming.
Talking about what Charlotte wrote about yesterday with the quality of the audio that Netflix is fixing. Why don't we let Charlotte introduce that?
Yes.
So, yeah, no, thanks, John. John's right. It's an audio upgrade that they've done. They are calling it, they use a specific phrase about actually
Wasn't
it's going to be
studio quality or something?
Well, they call it studio quality, and it is through basically a way of constantly adjusting the algorithm and the way that the audio is being transmitted, basically, is the crude, non-technical way of doing it, you know. So they point out they've had 5.1 surround audio since 2010, they had Dolby Atmos since 2016, and now they're launching this high quality audio, they call it.
Okay. So the thing that was interesting to me, like, to me, what this sounds like when we were talking about it earlier was sort of Plex, where if you have a Plex system set up, if you are watching content from your Plex server on an iPad, for example, or on an iPhone, it's going to optimize the version that it sends to that device so it looks the best it can on that device. And it's going to give you a slightly larger, higher quality, better audio version. For example, if you're streaming it through the Apple TV under your television with surround speakers and whatever else. So that's how Plex works, which is one of the nice things about Plex. And it's nice to have the option to do that. And so, John, you were talking about how the Apple TV is capable of this, right?
Are we talking about the video or the audio?
The audio. We were talking about specifically audio.
Yeah, Apple TV has always been, as far as I know, Dolby 5.1 capable.
Okay, correct.
That is a six-speaker system in a plane around you in the front. The low frequencies, the left and right channel in the front, the center channel in the front, the left and the right channel in the back. So that's six speakers. And that's in a plane. Dolby Atmos introduces a vertical element, so you need a special speaker connected to the Dolby channel so that Atmos can recognize that speaker and send the sound in a vertical plane. That's cool when you have things that are happening overhead, like aircraft and helicopters and stuff like that. So
Netflix as well can use both those systems. And it says this new, what it calls this new system that it's launched is put the principle of adapted streaming to audio. It already uses it for video.
Yeah, they're so good about that too. You know, Netflix is head and shoulders above Amazon in terms of the
adaptability. Exactly. So they call this adaptive streaming for audio. And on their tech blog, they wrote, this approach selects the audio bitrate based on network conditions at the start of playback. And they do that for video. And now they're going to they've moved to a similar principle for audio. And the idea, and this is going to be available for anyone with a 5.1 system, and the idea is that the audio quality is much higher. They said they were basically being given highly creative, highly cinematic scores and audio for TV programs, and they needed to create the technology to enable that creativity to be best displayed.
So the key there is that at 1 megabit per second bit rate, you can no longer hear the difference between that and non-compressed audio. The 24-bit, 48 kilohertz is a bit rate of about 1 megabit per second. But you don't need that because Netflix discovered that at 640 or 768, you can no longer hear the difference. They call that perceptually transparent.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, there are certain points where it applies to both video and audio where I see these things about 8K TVs and whatever else. And, you know, there's a point, I know part of the 8K thing is the size of the screen, but there are also points where you can keep adding so many pixels, but your eyes can't actually tell the difference. That's right, isn't it?
Right.
And I think,
well, if you sit close enough to an 8K screen, you will see the difference. Right. It's about 4 feet.
Yeah, but you're not going to be able to enjoy.
I was going to say, yeah, you can only see a very small section of the screen when you're that close. So yeah,
I want to comment on Game of Thrones, Kelly.
Yeah,
I wonder if HBO, and I don't know much about their app. Their streaming app, because I don't use it, but I wonder if it's capable of 4K and whether they actually mastered that in Dolby Vision for 4K viewers. And Dolby Vision has the capability of a very high range of contrast and range of brightness so that you can see dark areas really, really well. I've noticed that on my own 4K system. Scenes that were dark and undecipherable on my plasma in high definition really are crisp and stand out in 4K Dolby Vision.
Well, that's so the thing that people
I wonder if they were watching the Game of Thrones in high definition that doesn't have Dolby Vision and were subject to.
Right. Which is entirely possible. A lot of people don't have 4K.
I don't know for sure. I'd love to find out.
And HBO, I don't think I certainly don't believe they're streaming it in 4K. So that could be part of the issue.
Otherwise, it was just a cinematic screw-up.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
I think it was a cinematic screw-up because people had similar problems here on, I think, even on British TV. I don't think it's to do with streaming. I think it's to do with cinematography.
Yes.
Well, what the cinematographer came out and said basically was an answer that tends to infuriate lots of people in the tech field, which is, worked for me. So, you know, they weren't like, I don't know that anybody watched it on a air quote regular, you know, flat screen television or tried to stream it or tried to watch it on anything less than, you know, an 80 inch 4K television or something like that. So I don't know what the conditions were before it was released. And there were some people who said I could see everything fine. There were some people who said the entire thing was terrible. So there's been an entire range of experiences, but there's been a whole lot of discussion about, like, what kind of bandwidth is HBO giving for this? Are they even streaming a high-definition version? And it may just be that people with, like, older flat-screen televisions, for example, the TVs aren't able to downscale whatever it is that they're giving, or they're getting something really low, and they're not doing great at upscaling it, and so that's where some of that happens. So I think we're going to leave it there for now, though, and we will talk more about this. If we find out more about what exactly is going on with HBO and that streaming, we will absolutely let you know about it. And in the meantime, you should be watching stuff on Netflix because it looks and sounds a whole lot better, apparently. So I want to thank both of you for being here. Charlotte, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
John, thanks for coming by.
You're very welcome. Nice to be here.
As I said, you can leave comments in the show notes on the site. You can also email observations@macobserver.com, and you can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter. I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.